Okay, good morning, everybody. This is about 2:31, and I want to show you a couple websites. So over the weekend, I was able to transfer my Cypress College website to justhost.com. Maybe some of you use that site for a hosting service. So let me show you where that is. So this is the URL, www.dr-j-gober.com. So that's pretty easy to remember. And probably if you just go dr-j-gober, right, and hit Control Enter, that takes you right there. All right, so I'll put a link in Blackboard for this as well. Now, why do I have this here? Because this is where I put my lectures. All right, so here are all the lectures, Spring 2010. Here are the lectures. People were interested in that. Okay, so you're welcome to go to this, because the old Cypress College website is offline completely. Now, there's some other, here's another website, webenhanced.lbcc.edu/bioJG/bio60LJG. Here are some mock practicums of things that you might have seen in lab already. This is to help you prepare for the practicums. And you will find this under Learning Modules. I'll put the link in Blackboard for this as well. Okay, but you want to go to Learning Modules. And then, for instance, heart figures we see right here. And then there's brain figures and eye figures. These are photographs of actual specimens. Well, what you can do first is download an answer sheet like what you have in lab. This is just a blank answer sheet. Print it out. It's a PDF file. Okay, so here's just a blank answer sheet. Print that out. And then take the real practicum, like brain figures right here. And then after you take the practicum, go to the answer key, but don't look at the answer key first, right? And that will tell you if you answer them right. Like that is what? Oculomotor nerve. Okay? And you can play it in a slideshow mode, right? Oculomotor nerve. That's a pituitary gland. So after you study these, what's that? Olfactory bulb. Okay, so after you look through these, yeah, I'll put it in Blackboard, but it's web enhanced. It's not www. It's webenhanced.lbcc. That stands for Long Beach City College. .edu and /bioJG. Of course, my initials. Then slash. This big L here stands for lab. Bio60 lab JG. But there's no lab. It's just bio60LJG. And this works with. Let me try this. This works. Okay, Control Plus isn't making it any bigger. I'll put the link in Blackboard for you. This works with Internet Explorer. So it works with Vista, 7, XP, and Internet Explorer. Probably does not work with Firefox. You can maybe look at these individual pictures in Firefox, but you can't play it in the slideshow mode. Right, or you can look at it in the film strip mode, or you can look at it in the preview mode. Okay, and it's the same for the eye figures and heart figures too, as well. You can study the heart figures. All right, anybody have any questions about those links? Okay, so the lectures now are online at this different website, dr-j-gober. Okay. That's where you can find them. All right, and all the lectures so far are up there. All right, so what do we got to do today? We got to do some stuff today. I think we're going to finish up autonomic nervous system. Autonomic nervous system, which is chapter 15. So let's take a look at some more figures as well. All right, so last time we did do an introduction to autonomic nervous system. Okay, so what are the two main divisions of the autonomic nervous system? Okay, somatic and visceral are two motor nervous systems, but somatic is really not autonomic. It's something other than autonomic. Somatic means it goes, what's the effector organ for the somatic nervous system? Skeletal muscle. So somatic means voluntary, right? Autonomic nervous system means not, it means involuntary, means it happens automatically. So somatic and autonomic don't really go together. So what are the two divisions of the autonomic nervous system if somatic can't be one of them? Sympathetic and parasympathetic. And what's the relationship between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system? They're going to be antagonistic to each other, right? Almost every single case, 99% of the time, they're going to be antagonistic. So, for instance, if the parasympathetic is excitatory on one organ in your body, what is the sympathetic effect going to be? It's going to be inhibitory. Right, so excitatory and inhibitory, and those two inputs are mixed together to give you precise control and balance. Give me an example of how important antagonism is in your everyday life. It doesn't have to be your body, but if it's your body, that's fine.
Like the car,
in your automobile, you're always mixing the brake pedal and the gas pedal to control your car and have precise control over your car. That's right. You wouldn't think of driving your car with just the accelerator. And of course, you couldn't even drive your car if you only had a brake pedal, unless you were really strong, right? Because then you could push your car. That's fine. What about for the musculoskeletal system? What's a good example of antagonism there? Rectus abdominis and erector spinae protects your vertebral column in your back, right? So you don't herniate a disc. Those are always working together antagonistically to maintain your body position and balance and posture. Some other good examples would be the biceps brachii and triceps brachii. Here's a sign-in sheet. You might want to hold on to that for just a little bit. And sorry, all this bookkeeping, I wanted to make sure. All right, so Wednesday there's the first practicum for the new practicum coming up, which is what? Practicum 4. Nice. And then we have lecture exam 4 on the 28th of April. 28th of April, just so that everybody is kind of... Oh, and somebody had a question. What's going to be on that test? It's going to be chapters 13, which is central nervous system, 14, peripheral nervous system, 15, autonomic, 16, which is special senses, and 18, which is heart, but not blood vessels. Okay, just for the record. Okay. All right, so sympathetic and parasympathetic. I didn't ask many of these questions last time. All right, so let's review real quick. This slide right here shows the difference between the somatic nervous system and the autonomic nervous system. How many neurons does it take to get from central nervous system to effector organ for somatic nervous system? Just one, right? Here we see the cell bodies in the anterior gray horn, comes out the ventral root. Why does it leave the ventral root? Because that's the motor root. It has to, by definition. All motor signals leave the spinal cord via the ventral root, not the dorsal root, because the dorsal root is what? 100% sensory, right? All right, so this somatic neuron goes all the way to the effector organ, which in 100% of the cases is what kind of organ?
Skeletal
muscle, and will cause the skeletal muscle to contract. But this upper pathway right here is an autonomic pathway, and you see how many neurons does it take to get from CNS to effector organ? Two. And there's a synapse between them in a structure we call a autonomic ganglion. So there is a chemical synapse right here. And what are the effector organs for the autonomic nervous system? Okay. Can it be skeletal muscle? No, can't be skeletal muscle because that's somatic, but could it be other kinds of muscle? Yeah, like smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and then something else, glands. That's right. You don't have control over these things. They're taken care of autonomically. Okay. So that's a nice distinction between somatic and autonomic. And then we started to talk about Okay, maybe the parasympathetic pathway. And here we see the preganglionic fiber, which we find before or proximal to the ganglion. And then the postganglionic fiber proceeds distal to the ganglion. You understand my terminology? Sure. And this is what kind of synapse within the ganglion? What are your two choices for synapses? You've got, I mean, in terms of how they transmit information. Electrical or chemical. So what kind of synapse is this right here in the ganglion? It's chemical because you see a neurotransmitter being used, right? It's a chemical. And that neurotransmitter specifically in all these ganglia for the autonomic nervous system is acetylcholine. All right, so this preganglionic fiber is what we call cholinergic. And as a matter of fact, for the parasympathetic nervous system, here is the postganglionic fiber. And what kind of synapse is this right here? Chemical or electrical? It is electrical. It's chemical because I see a chemical being released, which is what we call a neurotransmitter. And a specific example right here is what neurotransmitter is it? Acetylcholine. It's the same neurotransmitter that's used for the preganglionic fiber. So if the preganglionic fiber is cholinergic, what about this postganglionic fiber? It's cholinergic as well. All right, so that's a parasympathetic nervous system. Cholinergic just means that it uses acetylcholine as the neurotransmitter. You'll have a better appreciation for that in just a second because we're going to switch neurotransmitters and then we change the name of that neuron. Okay? All right. So notice, which fiber is myelinated?
Pre-ganglionic.
Perfect. Preganglionic fiber. What about the postganglionic fiber? It is not myelinated, right? So this is going to look white. This is kind of going to look what? Like gray, for instance. Okay. So the reason why I asked you that question was to see if you could name these two different neurons. You did good. Which neuron is longer? The preganglionic, and the postganglionic is actually really dinky in real life. It's very short because this ganglion, sometimes for the parasympathetic nervous system, we call that a terminal ganglion. It's located right in the effector organ, right in the target tissue. And so the postganglionic fiber sometimes is microscopically short as well. And the preganglionic fiber is long. Oops, wrong way. Let's go this way. All right, now this one right here, this represents the sympathetic pathway, right? So those are, so far, now we've covered both divisions of the autonomic nervous system. Here you see the preganglionic fiber. Here is the postganglionic fiber. Now, when you look at this, tell me one similarity that it shares with the parasympathetic nervous system. It's got two neurons. There's a preganglionic and postganglionic. Really good. Now, what about the structure or what about the surrounding of these two neurons that's similar to the parasympathetic? The preganglionic is myelinated. The postganglionic is non-myelinated. What kind of synapses are used? Electrical or chemical? They're chemical because I see chemicals jumping across the synapse. I don't see like lightning bolts. Okay, so there's no electricity that goes across the synapse. There are chemicals. What's the general name for those chemicals once again? That's a specific name. But what's the general name? Neurotransmitter. In the ganglion, what's the name of the neurotransmitter? Acetylcholine. So the preganglionic fiber is what kind of fiber? It's myelinated, but in terms of the neurotransmitter that's used, it is a cholinergic fiber, right? All right, now the postganglionic fiber, you said already that it's a chemical synapse because we can see these axon terminals releasing neurotransmitter. But now, what's the specific name of this neurotransmitter? Norepinephrine. Is that the same as the preganglionic fiber? No, it's not. All right, so different neurotransmitters used. Therefore, this postganglionic fiber of the sympathetic pathway is not a cholinergic fiber. It's what we call an adrenergic fiber. It's adrenergic, not cholinergic. All right, another name for norepinephrine is called noradrenaline. Sometimes your body uses an analogous kind of compound, very similar to norepinephrine, and that's called epinephrine. And since norepinephrine is called noradrenaline, guess what epinephrine is called? It is also called adrenaline. Adrenaline is epinephrine, norepinephrine is noradrenaline. Have you heard of adrenaline before? When are you experiencing the effects of adrenaline? When you're attending an anatomy lecture, or when you almost die in a car accident?
Both.
Okay. So it's when, okay, you're really, really scared. When adrenaline or noradrenaline is released in your body, as well as norepinephrine and noradrenaline. Okay. So I want you to see the similarities between these two nervous systems. Okay. Some other differences. All right. We're looking at the parasympathetic nervous system right now. Let me zoom in. Okay. What can you tell me about outflow of the parasympathetic nervous system? How does it leave? How do these motor signals leave your central nervous system? And it shows you on this diagram right here. And you're right. You're right. It is through craniosacral outflow. So there are nerves that leave the brain. What do we call nerves that leave the brain? Cranial nerves, right? And here you can see all the cranial nerves. But primarily, it's this nerve right here, which is which one? Cranial nerve 10. What's the name for 10? Vagus, right? So you got to start working with your mnemonics right away. All right. And then also from the sacrum, from S2, S3, and S4 has some parasympathetic outflow as well to organs of the pelvic cavity. And that's about it. Okay. So that's the parasympathetic. So parasympathetic outflow is what we call cranial sacral. But for the sympathetic nervous system, look where the outflow is. Do you see any sympathetic nerves leaving the brain? No cranial nerves. What about the sacrum?
No.
It's only from T1 to L2. So therefore, we say this outflow is thoracolumbar. Right? Thoracolumbar. We can combine those terms just by putting an O between them, but it makes sense for the sympathetic nervous system. Would it make sense to say thoracolumbar for the parasympathetic nervous system?
No.
Right? That would be really wrong in terms of anatomy. All right, so the solid colored lines represent myelinated neurons. And which one are the myelinated neurons in an autonomic pathway? The preganglionic, yeah. So these are all preganglionic fibers. Notice where they all go. They all enter the sympathetic chain ganglia, which is like an auxiliary spinal cord on either side. So sometimes we call those the paravertebral ganglia, all right, besides sympathetic chain ganglia. And the dotted lines here represent unmyelinated or the postganglionic neurons. Okay, and we see a couple different modes of action. Some sympathetic nerves have a synapse in the sympathetic chain, right? So then the postganglionic fiber goes to the effector organ like the heart. Ooh. And I suppose I could ask you just to spice this up a little bit. What's the effect of sympathetic stimulation on the heart? Speeds it up. It also makes it beat stronger. Speeds it up and makes it beat stronger. That's sympathetic activity. All right. What is the effect of parasympathetic stimulation on the heart? It slows it down. So how do we understand that relationship? It's antagonistic, right? Okay, so that's a very important system for you to know about. And, well, by the way, what's the name of that parasympathetic nerve that goes to the heart to slow it down? Right there, yeah. Cranial nerve 10, you see, goes right to the heart to slow it down. Okay. All right, but the sympathetic goes to speed it up. All right, what else do I want to say about this particular diagram? The sympathetic chain ganglia contain a number of ganglions, but there are other ganglia that are located anterior to the spinal cord around the aorta. And sometimes we call these the prevertebral because they're in front of the vertebral column, or collateral ganglia. So sometimes the preganglionic nerve does what? Look at it. It passes right through the sympathetic chain. It doesn't synapse there, but it goes to another ganglia someplace else, these collateral ganglia, And then right in that ganglia is the beginning of the postganglionic fiber. All right, so sometimes it synapses in the sympathetic chain, sometimes it passes right through. And when a nerve fiber passes right through the sympathetic chain to go to the collateral ganglia, all of these nerves right here are what we call splanchnic nerves. I'm not going to ask you to know the various divisions or names of splanchnic nerves, but you should at least know that a splanchnic nerve is what kind of fiber and where does it belong in the nervous system? It's a preganglionic fiber, and it's a sympathetic nerve, right? It's a sympathetic nerve that passes through the sympathetic chain going to these collateral ganglia. All right. So what can you tell me about the length of these preganglionic fibers compared to the length of the postganglionic fibers for the sympathetic nervous system?
Short.
The pre's are short. The post are long. That's usually the case. Okay. And that's a distinction, all right, compared to the parasympathetic nervous system. Okay. So all of those things are really good. All right. I want to show you a couple other little things right here. So this slide right here just shows what? The sympathetic outflow versus the parasympathetic outflow. So when you look at that, I think it will make some sense. Okay. All right, now what do I want you to see? Let's take a look at this slide right here. Maybe the next one. We'll get to that in a minute. Ah, here's some familiar anatomy. For instance, what the heck is this structure right here? That's true. That's maybe true. Vertebral column, I like to think of bones, like vertebrae. Vertebral column is made out of bones. Does this look like bones right here? Spinal cord. Spinal cord is part of central nervous system. Okay, so I'm looking at nervous tissue right here, spinal cord. Okay, and since we're considering the autonomic system as a motor system, a motor pathway, how do autonomic signals leave the spinal cord?
Ventral root
that we have right here. Nerve cell bodies are in the lateral horn. And is this a sympathetic or parasympathetic outflow pathway? It's sympathetic, that's right. So in the thoracolumbar division, we have these lateral horns in the spinal cord gray matter. And that was your question last time. I can't say your name out loud. I wish I had a spitball or something. Okay. Look, see this lateral horn right here? That's in the thoracolumbar spinal cord, but that's the only place where it exists because that's the only place that has what? Sympathetic outflow. All right, so it leaves the ventral root and becomes part of the spinal nerve. All right, and remember, here is what? The dorsal ramus. Here is the ventral ramus. This is going to everywhere in your body posterior to the spinal cord. This is the ventral ramus innervating everything that's anterior to the spinal cord. That was part of the peripheral nervous system that we already looked at. All right, but here is, all sympathetic nerves have to enter the sympathetic chain. How does it enter the sympathetic chain, you might ask? Well, it leaves the ventral root, goes into the spinal nerve, and enters the sympathetic chain via this little bridge right here. This is what we call the white ramus communicans, or white ramus communicantes. It goes by both names. Why does this look white? It's myelinated. The preganglionic fiber is myelinated. All right, so notice that is the second pathway to get into the sympathetic chain. And then it might synapse within the sympathetic chain, so the postganglionic fiber then re-enters the spinal nerve, right, going to either the ventral ramus or dorsal ramus. And how does it go back into the spinal nerve after leaving the sympathetic chain? There's another little bridge right here, which is the gray ramus communicantes, or communicans. Why is that gray? You could say, well, because the postganglionic sympathetic fiber is a dotted line, which means not myelinated, right? So here is the gray ramus, here is the white ramus communicantes. Okay. Now this preganglionic fiber might also... Okay, well, let's take a look at this one. It enters through the white ramus. It can either ascend or descend through the sympathetic chain. That's the beauty of the sympathetic chain. All right, so irrespective of where it leaves the spinal cord, it can still go up or down divisions of the sympathetic chain. And here we see it arising and then synapsing. Okay. Now, what are some other things that could happen? Let's take a look at... this one right here. Okay, here's another little motif for sympathetic nervous system. It's leaving the thoracolumbar division of the spinal cord through the ventral root. And what kind of fiber is this right here? By structure, not in terms of the neurotransmitter that it's using. Is this the preganglionic or postganglionic? It's a preganglionic, so it's myelinated, right? So it goes in the white ramus communicantes, does not synapse in the sympathetic chain, so that means that it's going to pass right through to get to the prevertebral ganglion. How does it get from sympathetic chain to prevertebral ganglion? Through a splanchnic nerve. That's what I want you to know. A splanchnic nerve carries preganglionic sympathetic nerves. All right, so here it synapses. Here is the postganglionic fiber that goes to the effector organ, like smooth muscle and glands within the small intestine. Okay, so let's use this as an example to talk about, in terms of the neurotransmitter that's being used, what about this preganglionic fiber? Okay, how would we talk about the neurotransmitter that's being used by this preganglionic sympathetic fiber? There are two ways to think about that. The first way is to think that it's cholinergic. The second way is to say it's adrenergic. Cholinergic if it uses acetylcholine right here, or adrenergic if it uses norepinephrine. Can anybody remember what's the neurotransmitter that's used in this autonomic ganglion? It is acetylcholine, so this preganglionic fiber is cholinergic. What about this postganglionic fiber for this sympathetic nervous system? It uses norepinephrine, so it is an adrenergic fiber, right? Adrenergic fiber. Okay, that's pretty important to know that. All right, let's look at maybe another example. Here we see some preganglionic fibers entering the sympathetic chain through this white ramus communicans, which makes perfect sense because, what, these are myelinated fibers descending a couple levels, right? And as a matter of fact, this first one right here passes straight through via a splanchnic nerve to this prevertebral ganglia, right? And then we have the postganglionic fiber going to the urinary bladder. Okay. Now, there is one kind of funny exception to this. All right, so what is a good general rule to compare or to contrast the somatic nervous system with the autonomic nervous system? Somatic requires how many neurons to get to an effector organ?
One.
Somatic is voluntary, one. What about for autonomic?
Two.
That's the general rule. Now, here is one exception to that rule. But you're going to see this is an important kind of exception. All right, so here we have a nerve leaving from T8 to L1. So was that going to be sympathetic or parasympathetic outflow? That's got to be sympathetic, right? Because sympathetic is thoracolumbar, not parasympathetic. So it leaves the ventral root, goes into the spinal nerve, into the white ramus communicantes right here, passes right through the sympathetic chain. Right, and when a preganglionic fiber passes right through, it becomes a splanchnic nerve. So here's a splanchnic nerve. So it's going to go to a ganglion someplace. But now here is the exception. There really is no ganglia for this particular system. This splanchnic nerve goes all the way and enters the adrenal gland. In particular, the deep part of the adrenal gland, which is what we call the medulla. Right, the deep part of any organ is the medulla, where it synapses on these cells right here, which are called chromaffin cells. I don't think you have to know that, but these are the cells of the adrenal medulla. And when acetylcholine goes across this synapse, it causes these cells not to send an electrical signal someplace like a typical postganglionic fiber, right? But instead, these cells right here release both norepinephrine and epinephrine into the extracellular space. Now, what did we call norepinephrine before? Yeah, adrenaline. That's another name for it. But it belongs to a general class of compounds that we call that work across a chemical synapse, which we call a neurotransmitter. Okay? So you understand norepinephrine to be a neurotransmitter, but look what happens in this case. These chromaffin cells release norepinephrine. They don't stimulate another neuron. They get absorbed by a capillary, and guess where they go once they're in the capillary? Everywhere in the body, right? Norepinephrine gets transported everywhere in the body, but not just norepinephrine, but also epinephrine or adrenaline, okay, gets picked up by this capillary, goes everywhere in the body. And so now epinephrine and norepinephrine really aren't working as a neurotransmitter. They're working like a hormone, because a hormone is a chemical signal that gets picked up by the circulatory system and delivered everywhere in the body. And then all of your organs in your body get stimulated by epinephrine and norepinephrine when the sympathetic nervous system becomes activated. All right, so what would happen? Increased heart rate. What about your digestive system? Depresses the digestive system. What about the pupils in your eyes? They dilate so that you can really see what's going on. Okay? All right, so in this particular pathway, there is no postganglionic fiber because their job has been taken over by the cells of the adrenal medulla. So sympathetic effects usually affect every organ system in your body. We say there's a divergence of signals. It goes everywhere in your body. Well, the parasympathetic nervous system, there's no such divergence. Here's a good way to observe that. Parasympathetic, we see that the preganglionic fiber is just a straight shot into this ganglion right here, but if we look at the preganglionic fiber for a sympathetic system, look what happens. It branches all over the place because it's important to share that sympathetic outflow with all the organs of your body, right? So there's a lot of divergence for the sympathetic nervous system. It should affect every organ in your body, but the parasympathetic should have very specific targeted effects on various organs in your body, not so broad ranging. All right, so let's see if we can answer some of these questions right now. Let's see, did we answer this first one already? How would you describe the difference between the pre- and postganglionic neurons of the sympathetic nervous system? Pre and post for sympathetic. What about the preganglionic neuron in terms of length?
Longer.
It's myelinated, okay. But for sympathetic, they're short, relatively short, okay? All right. Why is the white ramus communicans white?
Myelinated.
It's myelinated. And why is the gray ramus gray, non-myelinated? All right, name the nerve that connects the sympathetic chain with a collateral ganglia or prevertebral ganglion. Yeah, that's a splanchnic. That's a really weird term, splanchnic nerve. There are a number of them. I don't want you to know all the different divisions of splanchnic nerves, but it's a nerve that passes right through the sympathetic chain. What is the general name for chemicals, for the chemicals, norepinephrine and epinephrine, which are secreted from the adrenal medulla? Okay, you know what? I maybe want to go back one question. Let's do this one first. What's the general name for a chemical, for the chemical norepinephrine, which is secreted from the postganglionic sympathetic neuron? It's secreted by a neuron. Yeah. Okay. But I'm talking about one that's being secreted by a neuron. What do we call a chemical signal secreted by a neuron?
Neurotransmitter.
Okay, and if it's a postganglionic sympathetic fiber, it's a neurotransmitter for sure, and that just happens to be norepinephrine, right? NE stands for norepinephrine. Okay, norepinephrine. So if it's secreted by a neuron, we call it a neurotransmitter. All right, now let's go up to this previous question over here. The cells of the adrenal medulla are not neurons, but they're going to secrete epinephrine and norepinephrine. All right, so they can't really be considered neurotransmitters. What do we like to consider those? Hormones, because they get picked up by the blood and taken everywhere in the body. All right, so they're really hormones. So here you have a compound, norepinephrine. Sometimes it acts like a hormone. Sometimes it acts as a neurotransmitter, depending on the type of cell that's secreting it. So in a lot of classes, and maybe some classes that you'll eventually take, we don't really teach the nervous system in a chapter and then the endocrine system in another chapter, because there's an interface between them. You have to realize that the endocrine and nervous system work together, and a lot of times we teach it and learn it as one system, and we would call that the neuroendocrine system. So they're related. Neurotransmitters usually have a very short duration of action, but a hormone has a longer duration of action. And maybe you've experienced this if you've ever thought you're going to die in a car accident. Right? What about your heart rate and force of contraction? Right? It's really, really fast, and your heart is like beating out of your chest if you really think you're going to hurt yourself in that car accident. And how long does that persist? Does it go away in like 30 seconds or a minute? No, it might take you at least a half hour or an hour for your heart to slow down, your breathing to slow down, to get back to normal, because all that epinephrine and norepinephrine, or adrenaline and noradrenaline, that got released from the adrenal medulla have long-lasting effects because they're acting as a hormone in your circulatory system. Okay? And you've got to be pretty careful of that when you're driving around. Okay. All right, here's another question. Are the quasi-postganglionic cells of the adrenal medulla, right? They're not really neurons, but they're really like acting as a postganglionic cell. Right? Are they nerve cells or endocrine cells? Let's see, do I have it right here? Ooh, don't have it. Okay, close your eyes. They're going to flip really fast through these. Okay, the question is, these right here, are these acting more like neurons or endocrine cells? Acting more like endocrine cells, right? Like a endocrine gland rather than nervous tissue, because they're releasing epinephrine and norepinephrine that get picked up by this capillary bed right here. All right, so this is one really important exception of the autonomic nervous system. This is just... Okay, so we're talking always about autonomic in here, right? Because we've covered somatic already. That's just to skeletal muscle, okay? But this is just a special sympathetic outflow pathway which does not have the postganglionic neuron. Instead of the postganglionic neuron, you have an endocrine cell that once it's stimulated, releases epinephrine and norepinephrine directly into the blood. And then that has an effect of sympathetic activity all over your body, because blood vessels go all over your body. All right. So I don't know if I answered your question exactly. You seem to be wanting some kind of specific answer. I didn't have a clear picture in my mind what you were asking. So ask me again if you want. Okay. So this is kind of a special figure because we only see what? The preganglionic fiber, no postganglionic fiber. As opposed to all of these other diagrams for the sympathetic nervous system. You see the preganglionic fiber and then the postganglionic fiber. So here is a good question for you. Here is the postganglionic fiber of the sympathetic nervous system. How would we characterize that particular fiber in terms of the neurotransmitter that it's using? It's adrenergic because it's releasing norepinephrine, right? And is this an endocrine cell or a neuron? This is a neuron, right? So this signaling molecule here that's being released at this chemical synapse is called Yeah, neurotransmitter, which for a sympathetic nervous system is norepinephrine, right? But what about this system right here, the adrenal medulla? Here is the preganglionic fiber. Where is the postganglionic fiber? There really isn't one. Here is a cell, right? The preganglionic fiber stimulates these cells, but if they're not neurons, what the heck are they? This is an endocrine gland, and it's going to release hormones, namely epinephrine and norepinephrine. And we call them hormones because they get picked up by the circulatory system and transmitted all over the body. Okay. All right. Now, to help remember some of the effects, you do have to remember at least these effects of the autonomic nervous system, the parasympathetic and sympathetic, on the heart, the digestive system, and respiration, and your eyes, between what? The parasympathetic and sympathetic. Got to just memorize these. All right, but there might be a way. You don't have to exactly memorize them. You just have to be able to characterize the usefulness of both of those motor pathways. And we talk about the two different nervous systems in two different ways. And one is called the fight or flight nervous system, and the other is the rest and digest. That's an easy way to remember. Rest and digest versus fight or flight. Or you could say rest and repose. What does repose mean? Like to lie down and take it easy is what that means. Okay. All right, so the fight or flight is which of the two autonomic nervous system, fight or flight? Sympathetic, right? That gets your body in tune to deal with a very stressful situation, which may or may not even be life-threatening. Okay. The parasympathetic nervous system is the nervous system that becomes activated when you're not in a stressful circumstance, like maybe after a meal, hopefully, right? Or when you're about ready to fall asleep. All right, so are you going to do anything to stimulate your sympathetic nervous system when you're going to go to bed for the night to fall asleep? Not a good idea, because it's going to do what? It's going to help keep you awake, right? So you don't want to activate the sympathetic nervous system. Now, if you're going to go see a movie, what kind of movie are you going to go see? How much does it cost to go see a movie now? Well, I don't know. Tickets are $10 or $15. You got to pay for parking. You know, it's another $30. If it's just you, right, it's only $30. But if you go with a significant other and family, right, it could be $100. All right. So say you're going to go spend $100 on a movie because you got to take a bunch of people with you, like kids and things like that, which is fun. You know, that's fine. But what kind of movie are you going to see? One that stimulates your parasympathetic nervous system or sympathetic nervous system? Everybody said sympathetic, a scary movie. Some people are shaking your head no. But let me pose the question the other way. Are you going to pay that amount of money to see a movie that activates your parasympathetic nervous system, which does what?
Nothing.
Makes you fall asleep. Are you going to go see a movie where you fall asleep in the middle of? No way. You're going to go see a movie that is going to do what for your heart rate? Make it go fat, increase the heart rate. What about your pupils during the movie? What's going to happen to them? They're going to dilate. What about your respiratory rate? It's going to go up. Your heart rate goes up. Your respiratory rate goes up. Start sweating, all right? That's the kind of movie that you would pay big bucks to go see, all right? And not the kind of movie that you're going to fall asleep. And I'm sure that all these guys like Spielberg, et cetera, have physiologists, right, that are measuring people while they're watching various effects that they're trying to develop for the cinema to see what's happening to them, right? Are their pupils dilating? What about their respiratory rate? What about their heart rate, right? And if they do some kind of movie technique and their pupils constrict and people start nodding out, guess what? That scene gets pulled out of the picture, I'm sure, right? Okay, so that's kind of a big difference between sympathetic and parasympathetic. So think in terms of those two divisions, and then you should be able to figure out what's happening to your physiology. All right. All right, so we could do a little, let's think of this scenario, okay? And then you could tell me what nervous system is operating in your body, right? Okay. Okay, so today after work, after school, you got to go to work. All right, which everybody's got to go to work sooner or later, right? Okay, so you go to work, And let's just say maybe you work at Blockbuster and, right, you're renting movies to people. And it just so happens, you know, it's going to be raining tonight maybe. There's a storm system coming in. So what do you think about the number of customers that are going to go to Blockbuster tonight? Probably not a lot. All right, so you clock in and you're getting a paycheck. Is that good or bad? That's really good. So how is your nervous system?
Parasympathetic,
right? You got all this money coming in and you're at work, so you're not really spending a lot, so you're parasympathetic, nervous system. You're feeling good, nice and relaxed. And since you don't have customers, guess what you're going to do? You could maybe fall asleep, maybe, but on the 28th you have what? Anatomy exam. So guess what you're going to do? You're going to open up your anatomy book and you're going to answer all the questions at the end of the chapter. And maybe you're going to read a chapter, you're going to label some figures. So now you're earning a paycheck, right? You're at work, plus you're learning a whole bunch of anatomy. How is your nervous system now? Well, yeah, parasympathetic, because you're accomplishing a lot. You don't have a lot of stress on you. You're studying way ahead of the test, right? You're not procrastinating. Fantastic. This is really good. Okay? All right, and then, so you look at your watch, and oh, it's time to go home. Because you were so having so much fun with anatomy, you forgot what time it was, you didn't have any customers. What nervous system's working?
Parasympathetic.
You've accomplished a lot. So you go, okay, I got to cash out the register. So all the money that you took in matches the money you have in the cash register, which means you don't have to put in a $20 bill to make up any mistakes you made when you were handing out cash. What nervous system is working?
Parasympathetic,
because everything's nice and controlled, no anxiety, you're doing like three or four things at one time, getting them all done. That's really good. So, you get to go home, all right, and it's kind of raining outside, right, and just as you step to the door, there's a big lightning bolt, all right, and then all of the lights in the neighborhood go out, the power goes out, and it's raining outside. So now, what's kind of happening? Are you still nice and relaxed? Okay, all the lights in the neighborhood are out. What nervous system kind of got activated as soon as that lightning bolt went out?
The
sympathetic nervous system, right? All right, so you step out in the parking lot, and you remember when you got to work, there was no place to park. So you had to park like three or four blocks away from the little shopping center that you're working in, right? And you look out, no lights anywhere in the neighborhood. You go, oh, now what nervous system is operating? What about your pupils? Dilated. All right, not just because it's dark outside, because you're what? A little anxious. What about your heart rate? It's elevated. What about your respiratory rate? It's all that is elevated, so the sympathetic nervous system now is being activated, right? Okay, so you start walking to your car, and you're doing it kind of fast because it's raining out, and then all of a sudden you hear some footsteps behind you. Now what happens to your heart rate? Even higher. Right? So what nervous system is being activated?
Sympathetic
nervous system, right? So then you make your way to your car and put your little beeper to unlock your car, right? And then you hear my voice saying, oh, what are you doing out so late at night? Okay, so now what happens to you? Okay, you go, oh, thank God, it's a friendly voice. Your parasympathetic nervous system takes over again, right? And hopefully you can drive home without shaking at that point in time, but maybe not, because why? What was being activated?
Sympathetic,
but also via the adrenal medulla, so you have elevated levels of epinephrine and norepinephrine in your body, which is going to take a while to clear out, right? Okay. Might take quite a while. So that's a good way to think of sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. Okay. Okay, and even if you don't realize that you have adrenaline working in your body, you don't have the same kind of thought processes and control over your body over that real exciting event. I could think of another kind of example of the long-lasting effects of adrenaline on the body. Does anybody get shots for allergies? Maybe some people got shots for allergies every once in a while, yeah. And then sometimes if you get too high a dose, you go into anaphylactic shock, right? That happened to me one time, and it's easy to tell because you can't speak. You get a lot of edema in your throat, your larynx right here, and so you want to think, you still can think clearly, but you can't vocalize any words. So I got a shot one time, And then I hopped on my motorcycle and went home during the peak of hay fever season, and the shot and the hay fever, and I'm sure being on the motorcycle kind of overloaded all my senses. So by the time I got home, I couldn't talk. So what do? Well, I'll hop back on the motorcycle, go back to the health service, right, and say, what? And you can't say what's going on, but if people are there that are educated, which you all will be, you know what's happening. Somebody's in anaphylactic shock. And what is a really nice quick antidote for anaphylaxis? Anybody know? Like if you're allergic to bee stings, what do you carry with your pen? EpiPen. Oh, what's in an EpiPen? Epinephrine. And that immediately reverses the effects. That's really, really nice. All right, but now you have all this epinephrine and norepinephrine in your system, so you're kind of shaky, so they treated me, no problem. Except that evening, which was about 5 hours later, I had to pitch in a baseball game. All right, so I was a pitcher. And there was nothing I could do to get the ball over the plate. It was amazing. Okay, I tried breathing and relaxation, and it was just lucky I didn't kill somebody. Okay, because I had no control. So the effects of epinephrine could actually last for hours and hours and hours. That's kind of an interesting little story. All right, so guess what? I think that's it for autonomic nervous system. All right, so is that pretty important nervous system? Because it controls almost everything in your body except for skeletal muscles. All right, so that's a pretty good discussion of autonomic nervous system. And you know what you should probably be able to do? You should probably be able to draw out this pathway, the outflow pathway. And I don't have time to give quizzes in here, but in lab sometimes I give this as a quiz. Drawing, you know, drawing is really important, really enhances your ability to see things. So let's just draw a pathway. All right, so what do we got? Ooh, red, that's nice. Okay, what do we got right there?
Spinal cord.
Okay, so here is anterior. Right here, here's posterior. And so where are motor where's the motor nerves going to leave? Okay, so anterior, so they're going to come out over here. So what do we call this little structure right here? You're right, but I'm thinking like this big trunk of tissue coming out right here. That is the ventral root. All right, here is the dorsal root. Oh, then there's another little bulge right here. What's that bulge on? Yeah, that's the dorsal root ganglia, DRG. Okay, so if you don't see the acronyms, you can maybe see me after class or something. All right, so here's the cell bodies, right, for the sympathetic nerves. This is what, the lateral horn leaving the ventral root. The ventral root and dorsal root come together. What is this thing called? That's the spinal nerve. Okay. Now, on either side of the spinal cord for sympathetic nerves, there are, too bad that's right there. Where can I do this? I guess I'll put it right here. All right, these are like auxiliary spinal cords that are going up and down. And up and down on either side of the spinal cord for sympathetic fibers. What are these things called? Yeah, so this is the sympathetic chain ganglia, right? So sympathetic nerves can enter the sympathetic chain ganglia. And how does it get into the sympathetic chain ganglia? Yeah, this is the sympathetic chain right there. This is a preganglionic fiber, right? Preganglionic fiber. Is it myelinated or not myelinated? It's myelinated, so what color is it? It's white. So this is the white ramus communicans, right? The white ramus communicantes or communicans. All right, and there's a synapse right here, so here is the, what fiber is this? That's postganglionic fiber. It's going to go back into the spinal nerve, and how does it get back into the spinal nerve? Again, it's by the color. Gray ramus, because it's what? Not myelinated. So here's the gray ramus communicans. All right, and once it's in the spinal nerve, where can it go? It can go to two places. Now, these are what? These are not roots, but rami. All right, so this is the
dorsal.
I'm going to put RA right here because we got a dorsal root. So dorsal ramus, this is the ventral ramus going to everything anterior to the spinal cord. Dorsal ramus, everything posterior to it. Now we're almost done. Some nerves, when they enter the sympathetic chain, pass right through. Splanchnic nerve, right? So here we got a SP. I can't call that a spinal nerve. That's a splanchnic nerve, but you should probably know how to spell splanchnic. It's kind of weird. And it goes to another ganglia because it didn't synapse here. It synapses on this ganglia. And this one right here is called the collateral ganglion. And then we've got like this dotted line, which means not myelinated. All right, so here's the preganglionic fiber. Here's the postganglionic fiber going to some effector organ, like cardiac muscle. Okay, so I would try to draw all that out because that will really help you see what? There's two neurons that are required, right? The preganglionic and postganglionic, how it gets into the sympathetic chain, but if it passes through, it goes via that splanchnic nerve. Okay. Now, if it's going to the adrenal gland, it would come right through, all right, go to the adrenal gland, which kind of looks kind of triangular because of the way it sits on top of the kidney, to the adrenal medulla, and then there are these endocrine cells inside the adrenal medulla, which then release epinephrine into a blood vessel right there. It's a splanchnic nerve, yeah. It joins a splanchnic nerve because it passes right through the sympathetic chain. Okay. So you don't have to remember all the different divisions of splanchnic nerve. Just say, passes right through. This is a preganglionic fiber. It's a part of a splanchnic nerve someplace. Okay. All right. Should we do that again? Let's do it again. Let's do it fast this time. Let's see how long it takes. I like to do this in lab too. You have timed exams. Chrono. All right, so we got spinal cord. Ooh, a little wild. Must have been scared on the way to work or something. Okay, so here's a lateral horn. Okay. It comes out the ventral root. All right, and we got nerves coming in. The dorsal root, maybe past the dorsal root ganglion. The roots come together. Ooh, sorry, I'm getting a little sloppy. This is the spinal nerve right here. Okay, makes sense. So signals are going out here. Signals are going in there. All right, but if it's a sympathetic fiber, it's got to leave the spinal nerve and go into the sympathetic chain ganglion. That's the extent of the preganglionic fiber, where it's going to synapse on a second cell and go back into the spinal nerve, so it comes in like that. So this entering is myelinated fiber, so this is the white ramus communicans, the one entering the spinal nerve from the sympathetic chain. This is the gray ramus communicans. And let's see, where can this go? Dorsal ramus, ventral ramus, right there. Or maybe, what? It's going to pass right through. This is a SP nerve, splanchnic nerve, to a collateral ganglion, where you have the postganglionic neuron. All right, so that took me about a minute and a half. And I was horsing around a little bit. So you guys can do it, I'm sure, in a minute. All right? And then so you should know, this preganglionic neuron, in terms of neurotransmitter, is what kind? It's myelinated, but in terms of the neurotransmitter that's being used? Acetylcholine, which means it's cholinergic. The postganglionic fiber is adrenergic because it uses norepinephrine as a neurotransmitter. Okay. And then you should know the effects of acetylcholine and norepinephrine on various organs in your body, like your iris. What is norepinephrine's effect on the iris?
Dilates
it. Okay. What about digestion? Does it inhibit digestion or stimulate digestion? Okay, sympathetic actually decreases digestion, because when you're running away from somebody, you don't need to be digesting. You need all that blood flow to go to your heart, to your brain, and to skeletal muscle so they operate, right? So the parasympathetic is what? Rest and digest is parasympathetic. Okay. All right. Well, I got a couple minutes to talk about the next chapter, which is, I think it's the fun one. This is a fun one. I kind of get carried away with this one, unfortunately. Senses. All right, so I do want to say a couple of interesting things about senses. And in particular, that's a little small, huh? How do I zoom this? View. Zoom, text width. Okay, we've already talked about, response loop. What does a response loop always start with? A stimulus, and what is this? And then it goes, a stimulus is appreciated or picked up on your body by a
receptor.
Goes in via afferent nerves to the central nervous system, right? Central nervous system makes a decision on what to do with that information, sends a decision out via the motor pathway or efferent pathway to an effector, which then produces a response, right? So receptors are really important to communicate with your environment, right? To produce response loops to maintain what we call homeostasis in your body. So there are a number of different kinds of receptors. When we started talking about the peripheral nervous system, we talked about a bunch of receptors on the surface of your skin. We call those general receptors, like pain and temperature, vibration, all right? But in this chapter, we're going to talk about special senses, which are a lot different. And those need special receptors. There are about 5 special senses on your body. One is vision. Another is smell, which is what we call olfaction, taste on your tongue. We call that gustatory sensation. And then hearing is special. And you have a couple other senses in your ear for balance, the couple equilibrium senses. All right, those are what we call special senses. And the big distinction between a general sense and a special sense is that a general sense raises to your consciousness from receptors that are located everywhere in your body, while special is only from 1 or 2 very highly organized receptor organs. And so let's do some examples. A general sense would be temperature. Say I have an ice cube, okay? And where do you have temperature receptors? 1 or 2 locations on your body or all over? All over. If I put this on your kneecap, could you tell it was hot or cold? Your back? Hot or cold? Your tip of your nose? No problem. Your earlobe, belly button, you could tell it was cold, right? No problem. So that sense, temperature, is a general sense because you have receptors where?
Everywhere.
Okay. A special sense, all right, means that you can appreciate that energy, that modality of energy, from 1 or 2 locations on your body, and that's it. So if I have a flashlight and shine it on your belly button, can you see it?
No.
Kneecap? No. Okay. Earlobe? No. Shine it in your eye?
Yep.
You can see it only if those photons enter your eye. So that's what, a general or special sense? Special, because only 2 locations. All right. What about, what's another one? Taste, gustatory. I got a sugar cube. If I put that on your belly button, can you taste it?
No.
Kneecap? No. Earlobe? No. Fingertips? No, only your tongue has receptors. So is that general or special?
Special.
All right, so that's the big difference between special and general senses. All right, so olfaction is, and this is where we're going to start next time, olfaction is the sense of smell. And can you smell with your fingertips? No. Elbows? No. Only your nose, so that is a special sense. And it's got some highly organized structures that allow you to smell those things. All right, so we're going to start there on Wednesday.